I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Don Newman joins me now. He is one of the country's most respected political journalists and commentators, and he's just published his first book, Welcome to the Broadcast, a memoir. If you're a fan of Mr. Newman's, you'll know the title of this book is how he would open his CBC Politics broadcast every day, usually from the foyer of the House of Commons. What he's written is a fascinating book that looks back at more than 40 years of Canadian and international politics. He began his print and broadcast career in Winnipeg, going on to the Globe and Mail, and then as CTV's first Washington correspondent. His years at the CBC, including, launching News World, or what's now known as the CBC News Network, are what he's known for best. In this book, you get the stories he broke on the air with insightful context and commentary, as well as the stories behind the scenes of history, all of which he was at the fore of for so many years, like Meech Lake, the Quebec referendums, and Watergate, not to mention the people who he covered, Diefenbaker, Tommy Douglas, Trudeau, Mulroney, Turner, Chrétien, Martin, and Stephen Harper. Don Newman is the chair of Canada 2020, a nonpartisan forum to further the political, social, and economic well-being of Canadians. He was the senior parliamentary editor of CBC Television News and received many awards, such as a Gemini for Lifetime Achievement, the Charles Lynch Award, the Hyman Solomon Award, life membership to the Canadian Parliamentary Press Gallery, and the Order of Canada. This book is published by HarperCollins. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program from Ottawa today, Don Newman. Mr. Newman, good morning.
Good morning. Good to see you.
Thanks for joining us. I guess I should say welcome to the podcast.
Well, you know, we had a podcast of the politics program, mm-hmm. and that's how they told me, well, we're going to have a podcast, and this was a few years ago. Now I understand completely how important podcasts are, but at the time I said, we're just going to replay the show, but you have to do an opening, and it has to be welcome to the podcast. So, you and I are in good company.
Now, do people still come up to you and say welcome to the broadcast?
They do. It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
They do, and it can be almost wherever I am. I was in Toronto about a week and a half ago, and I got in the cab, and I sat in the back. And the driver looked in the mirror, and he looked at me, and he said, "Welcome to the broadcast." So, it happens. It happens all the time. I guess I'm either blessed or cursed with it for now, anyway.
I mean, in the Canadian political context, it's sort of like Jackie Gleason's, how sweet it is.
Yeah. Well, I didn't, I explained this actually just in the acknowledgments of the book, but I always, in television, everything is a show. For instance, if you're working on Hockey Night in Canada, they call the game the show, right? Because they're doing a show around mm-hmm. it. To me, a show was always sort of entertainment. Maybe you had a band and a comedian, and I didn't want to. I didn't think what we were doing was a show. Although everybody else that worked on it said, what's on the show today, and so forth. But so I thought, well, I don't want to call it a show, and I thought about calling it a program. And I thought, well, a program also has another meaning in that you can't tell the players without a program.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, it actually is a broadcast. So that's why I called it that. And I had no idea that the welcome would catch on.
Yeah. Did you like looking back in this book?
Pretty well. There's some personal stories in there about loss mm-hmm. and so forth I felt, to be honest, because the book is about all the events that have happened since the 60s in our country, as you said, but also it is about me, and I thought, well, people know I had these different events, because at the time they got quite a bit of publicity, and I better be honest about them, so that was the hardest part to write. The other thought, in a way, is as you're going through, you say, gosh, I've been around a long time. I thought I was only 42 years old, but I only feel 42, but...
Yeah.
Actually, I'm not.
Now, Dave, you alluded to the deaths of your son Lincoln and his mother Audrianne. They died 2 years apart. Is that right?
Just under three.
Yeah,
just under three. But in 92 and 94.
Yeah. How do you deal with loss? I mean, you must feel it more acutely because you are in the public eye, I guess. And you can't just go away for a year or two. you do have to go back to your job, and it's a high profile one at that. Did you think the work helped at all?
I do. I think having to go back to work after Link died, I was off 3 weeks, and I think, you know, having to get up in the morning and having to go and having to, you know, this kind of place where you had to put on a shirt and tie and wash your face and comb your hair, I think that was a very good discipline that I just had to follow. And then I had to think about what I was doing and concentrating. And I think that that helped. But it's, I mean, you never really get over a loss of a child. You just get used to it. And I'm not over it yet, but I am used to it. And so I think yeah, the work did help.
Yeah, and there's a chapter in the book about them, and of course your first wife Audrey. I mean, she was there from the beginning, right?
Yes, I met her in Regina, which was my second job. And, yes, we'd been together a long, long time.
Yeah. There's a funny story in the book about how, I guess she worked at a radio station. Was it CFRB in Toronto?
That's right.
Yeah, and she gave you a tape recorder because you wanted to work on your fringe.
Right.
And you brought it to, I guess you were covering an event with Trudeau or whoever you were covering at the time, and you were a print reporter at the time, and you were using the tape recorder. And everyone in the press gallery thought you were nuts.
And well, that's true. I just want to say about Audrey Ann. Audrey Ann died, I think, not having work to do the way I did every day probably made it even harder for her. But the other thing, and it's in the book, 4 years later, I married again to my current wife, Shannon. And, you know, I've been very lucky to be married to two terrific women. Most people are lucky to find one, and I've been lucky to find two.
So. Indeed, yeah.
But the tape recorder story, yes, I was the first print reporter in the Parliamentary Press Gallery, and maybe anywhere, but certainly in the Parliamentary Press Gallery, to use a tape recorder to take down what people were saying in scrums. And it also convinced me then that probably TV was the future, because originally in scrums, people giving the scrum would speak slowly, and they would pause, and they would watch as the print reporters wrote in their notebooks what they were saying. And with the advent of TV, they just played to the camera, and they started speaking in complete sentences. I couldn't write that fast, and so I got this tape recorder that I'd had really for my French lessons, and the first time I showed up with it was in southern Ontario with Trudeau on a trip. And I was ridiculed on the press bus. You know, what are you in radio now? What are you doing? and the interesting thing was that a man named Ken Mason, who was covering the trip for CBC Radio, came up to me after one stop and he said, "Could I borrow your tape? I missed some of what Trudeau said." And so I lent him the tape. But there wasn't an outbreak of tape recorders in the press gallery. And then I was away in Washington and Edmonton for 9 years, and when I came back to the press gallery in 1981, the first scrum I went to, lo and behold, there was every print reporter with a tape recorder, and none of them came back, because some of them had been there in 10 years, 9 years earlier. No one came back and said, "Gosh, Don, you were awfully smart." Yeah. In fact, I don't think they remembered. Only I did.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I guess it wasn't an ambition for you to go onto television, right?
Well, my first job was actually as a copy boy in a newspaper, but that was just a summer job when I was in university. And my first really day-to-day full-time job was at a television station in Winnipeg that had just come on the air when the government, the Diefenbaker government, started giving out licenses to private stations in big cities. So I had worked in television for a year, and then I'd worked in television for another year, television and radio in Regina, and then a bit of radio in Winnipeg, and then I got into print, and then I got through to the Globe and Mail, and I loved working at the Globe and Mail, and I really enjoyed being in the Parliamentary Bureau, but I always knew in the back of my mind that television was interesting, and I wasn't really looking for a job, but when it came along, I took it, because partly, again, television had improved technically so that it was easier to report the news on television, and partly because I just realized through the tape recorder story that that's where politicians, at least, were thinking that it was important to be seen and heard.
And when you were in Washington for CTV, everything was done in film, and so you'd have to fly the film back to Toronto, is that right?
That's right. CTV News then, as it is now, was on at 11 o'clock. And we could go out during the day, and we could film till about 3:30. And then we had to race over to National Airport, which is not very far from downtown Washington. And we shipped the film on Allegheny Airlines, which is now part of U.S. Air. And it got to the plane left about 5:30 from Washington. It stopped in Erie, Pennsylvania, went on to Toronto, and it got in about 7:30. And the driver picked it up and took it out to CFTO, which is sort of at the east end of Toronto, and the airport's at the west end. But they had a processing machine there, and they processed it and got it on the air for 11 o'clock. So that's basically how we did it. And it worked out surprisingly well. There was very few days that it snowed and the plane didn't land or something like that. And we got so that we had a... we took a whole bunch of waybills for the for U.S. Air, or for Allegheny as it was then, and we filled them in the car as we were going to the airport. So we had the system down to... we'd come in every day, and the clerk said, oh, there they are. And they kind of expedited through for us.
Yeah. What was it like to cover Watergate as a Canadian reporter and to be in Washington during those times? I mean, I guess at the time you wouldn't know how the story ended, so, I mean, that's probably what made it more exciting, right?
Well, it did. It made it incredibly exciting, but it made it... well, to be in Washington at any time is pretty exciting, and to be there and... opening the bureau, there hadn't been anybody there before for CTV, and then to have this huge and incredible story land in your lap was really, really exciting, and it was really good because the board of CTV were not entirely convinced that it was worthwhile having a full-time bureau in the American capital. Hard to believe now, but they weren't. But within a few months, Watergate was running, and it was a running story, and everybody was happy they had a reporter there. It worked out on that level very well, too. But it, the other thing I would do, I would fly back to Toronto, sometimes on big stories, and I would appear in the studio. We'd have the videotape, which we'd get from NBC, fed in, and we'd edit it, and I'd actually be in the studio with Harvey Kirk doing the newscast with him, and then I'd have to get up really early the next morning and come back out and be on Canada AM and talk about Watergate as well. So Watergate was really just, it couldn't have worked out better for me. It didn't work out well for Nixon, but it worked out really well for me.
Yeah. Now in your career in television, you always had this unique look and sound about you. Did you consciously set out to have the look or sound that you had or that you wanted to convey?
No. In fact, I was amazed the first time I was impersonated by someone. I thought, well, I really, and I think it was Bob Robertson who used to have a show called Double Exposure.
Yeah.
And I thought, do I really sound like that? And then people, as the show got better known and me with it, sometimes interviewers would say, well, how did you develop that style and so forth? And I'd say, God, I didn't know I had a style, and I just did my thing.
Yeah.
And so, no, I didn't. But maybe, I think one of the things that works on television is being natural. And perhaps because I didn't bother developing it or wasn't smart enough to think I should have anything to develop, didn't get it, maybe it, in a strange way, because it was genuine, it came across that way.
Yeah, when you sent your audition tape to CTV, didn't they say that you sounded like Cronkite?
No. The joke was, and this, I was in the Globe and Mail bureau, and I was asked to fill in one week on the program Question Period, and I filled in, and it went very well, and. But I'd been in TV in Winnipeg and Regina, but I hadn't bothered telling people, and people hadn't asked me, and who cared where you'd been before? And afterwards, Bruce Phillips, who was the bureau chief at the time and the host of Question Period, said, Schleifer, you were really good on that. If you're ever interested in TV, let me know. And I said, well, I will. What do you think the opportunities are? And he said, well, someone here is actually leaving. They're going to Western to teach at the journalism school. And I have an opening coming up in a couple of months. So I said, well, I'd like to talk to you about that. And to make a long story short, I had to do a piece to camera, just standing outside the House of Commons and the cameraman holding the camera on his shoulder, just and it was on film. And I'd written a piece, and it was about the NDP leadership race that David Lewis won. I'd been covering it for the Globe. I knew pretty well by heart what it was. So I did the piece to the camera, and Bruce took the film. He didn't bother processing it in Ottawa. I just sent it to Toronto. And he phoned me about a day later, and he said, my God, they think you're Walter Cronkite, the way you could just deliver that. But he didn't say I sounded like Walter Cronkite. Yeah. And but at that point, I hadn't told Bruce I'd already been on TV. So that I wasn't trying to be deceptive. But he said, this is the best audition they've ever seen from a newspaper guy, including mine. And I said, well, I have to confess, Bruce, I've been on TV before.
I guess we first saw you, started seeing you every day on television. I guess that was during Meech Lake, right?
Well, I was...
I guess News World had just started, and I guess...
But, you know, I'd been on the CTV National News and then the CBC National News, not every day, but a lot of days, and particularly, you know, with stories like Watergate, a lot, and Camp David a lot with the CBC. Then I did a show called This Week in Parliament, and I was on really just once a week for half an hour with my own show. And then News World started, and I started appearing regularly, but Meech Lake was a huge story for News World. It was kind of like Watergate was when I opened the CTV Bureau in Washington. Suddenly, it was just an all-encompassing story, and you were on all the time. And it really, again, Meech Lake didn't work out very well, but it was really good for News World.
Looking back at it, because the generations since won't know just how tenuous the country was. I mean, it could have fallen apart, couldn't it, in the early 90s there. Were you ever concerned covering it that it would?
Well, when I was concerned was in the 1995 referendum.
Yeah.
And I have this in the book, but we were seeing a running poll every night that... a number of people had commissioned, and the CBC was one of them. And going into the last weekend of the campaign, in October of 95, the yes side was ahead. And so we had basically talked about what would we do when the yes side won. And basically it came down to, well, we're not really sure. But, you know, as it turned out, one percentage point, you know, 51.5 to 49.5, the no side won. But going into that, I thought, yeah, this is really, really dicey, and this could really happen, and what would happen next.
Was that the most exciting for you, the most exciting story that you covered?
Well, it was the one that gave me, I guess, the most concern. The most exciting story, just from my own participation, was Richard Nixon's resignation.
Yeah.
Because I started off the evening of his speech in Toronto, anchoring the CTV coverage, and when we were finished and finished the news, I got on a plane that the network had chartered, a private plane, and flew to Washington, where I was picked up and went downtown to a studio where we made pre-arrangements. And I basically hosted Canada AM from Washington for 2 hours with the whole Nixon resignation impact. And there had been producers down there and lining up guests, and it worked out very well. I was getting a little tuckered by then, but I had to get in the car and drive back out to the airport and fly back in the private plane to Toronto, where I got there in time to be on the air as Nixon was leaving the White House. And then, after that, I had to work through the rest of the day preparing the reports for the national news that night and be on the national news that night. And so that was certainly the most physically exhausting and mentally challenging story I think I've ever done. The Meech Lake week in June of 1990 kind of rivaled that because, as you say, News World had started, and I was I had a program there, plus I was appearing every day on the morning show, plus I was on the total network coverage. I was the main reporter outside scrumming the Prime Minister and the Premiers as they went in and out of the talks. So, and I was almost 20 years older by then. But I stood up to them both. But those were the two most challenging, physically demanding stories that I think I had to do. Because you're on live, and you have to pay attention. And there's virtually no script. But it's actually exhilarating. You're only tired after it all ends, and you think, you know, you wake up the next day and you're not bad, and the day after that you think, boy, I didn't see that truck coming when it hit me, but I sure feel it now.
Now, you opened the book with a testy exchange you had with John Baird a few years ago. Right. What was it like when you guys got off the air?
He actually then went on and did some other interviews.
He didn't glare at you or anything like that, or say anything?
Well, he wasn't very happy while we were going at it. But, you know, he was giving as good as he got, but I was giving it back.
Yeah.
And at one point I said to him, if you think I'm being unfair, you can always complain to the CBC ombudsman. Because, you know, it was pretty back and forth. Not the usual kind of interview you'd see.
Right.
But he did... You know, he held his ground. He didn't say, "Oh gosh, you're right, Don. I'm sorry, I thought about that." he stuck to his guns, and when we were finished, there were other reporters around watching, and they started talking to him. And he and I stepped back, and my producer Sharon Musgrave was over in the bureau, and I said to her on the intercom, I said, "Well, how would you like that?" And she said, "Wow." So I wasn't quite sure where I was going, but we got flooded with emails, and some of them saying, you know, "You're a communist and go away," but a lot of them saying, "Well, that, you know, that's what journalism is really about," and I appreciated that. And I got one from the CBC ombudsman saying, "Gee, thanks for giving me more work."
But Hayes and Argue, he was the only politician who ever threatened to kill you, right?
That's right. Yeah. That's right. And, you know, he was a big, strong, tough guy, and he could have.
Yeah. Well, people forget who he was. He was, I guess he was a CCFer in Saskatchewan.
Right.
And then he became a Liberal senator later on, is that right?
Well, he was a CCFer in Saskatchewan, and when after the 58 election, the CCF were wiped out to about 8 seats. And he was one of them, and he became the interim leader. But that was when the CCF and the Canadian Labour Congress decided to form the NDP. And so they did. And in 1961, there was a leadership convention, and Tommy Douglas, who had been Premier of Saskatchewan at that point for about 16 years, beat Argue. The two candidates were both from Saskatchewan, and both from the same general area in Saskatchewan. And so... Douglas became the leader, and in the fall of 61, I went to Regina, and I started covering the committees of the legislature, and I got to know, covering committees is a great way to get to know everybody, mm-hmm. much better than covering the House, and one evening I was having coffee with a couple of Liberal MLAs who said, you know, Argue's negotiating to become a Liberal. And I said, "What?" And so they told me, yes, he was, you know, mad that Douglas had won, and he thought the unions were running the party, not the farmers. And so the next day or so, I went around and I said to other committee members, are you part of the negotiations with Argue to the Liberals? And they said, no, it's all the federal Liberals that are doing it. But I got enough people to confirm it that I told my boss, and he said, "Well, I think you've confirmed it. We can go with that story." So we put it on the air, and argue was in Ottawa, and he denied it to Canadian press. And it seemed to be relatively quiet until I went down to Weyburn, Saskatchewan, to cover the results of the by-election that had been created by Douglas becoming the federal leader of the party and no longer being the premier. And when I got there and went into the NDP committee room, still the NDP, Argue was in there. And he grabbed me and he took me outside and he said, I should kill you for reporting that I'm negotiating with the Liberals. And I said, well, I got it on good authority, and I ran it by my editors, and I reported what I think is true. I should kill you. And then he gave me a push and walked away. Well, a couple of months later, about March of 62, I was working on a Sunday afternoon in the newsroom of a radio station called CKCK, and the phone rang, and I picked it up, and lo and behold, it's Hayes and Argue. And he said, is that Don Newman? I said, yes, it is. He said, well, it's Hayes and Argue. It's Hazen. I said, it's Hazen. And I said, hello, Mr. Argue. Are you coming to kill me?
Yeah.
And he said, well, I just wanted to let you know I'm on my way to Assiniboia, which was the big town in his riding, which was called Assiniboia, and I'm going to announce tomorrow that I'm joining the Liberal Party. And I said, no kidding. I felt like saying, so what else is new? But I was all of about 21. So I said, so I phoned the news director who had approved the story originally, and I said, you won't believe this. Hazen Argue just phoned me, and he's going to announce tomorrow that he's joining the Liberal Party. And he said, do you know where he is? And I said, yeah, whatever the hotel was. He said, phone him back and see if he wants to be on TV tonight. And we'll break the story on TV at 9 o'clock. And so I phoned him back. And so Sunday evening, it was a pretty good night for TV viewing, and there was only one channel in Regina at the time. So I phoned him back, and I said, would you like to be on TV for half an hour with me and a couple other guys talking about your career change? Oh, I'd love that. That'd be great.
Yeah.
So lo and behold, from killing me to a few months later appearing on TV with me, and we never mentioned that he was going to kill me. And when he did, he ran as a Liberal, and he got elected as a Liberal. Then he ran in the next election, which was a year later because it was a minority government, and he lost. And then Lester Pearson put him in the Senate. And he was in the Senate, pretty well through the 80s. And we would run into each other quite often. And neither of us ever mentioned that he was going to kill me.
Yeah.
We'd always say hello, but anyway, so that's right. He's the only one who was going to kill me.
Now, John Turner and Brian Mulroney, they wanted you to work for them, and then later on, Chrétien wanted to know if you'd want to be Information or Privacy Commissioner. Were you ever offered a seat in the Senate?
I was asked once if I'd like to be considered, and I said no. So I was never offered it, and even if I'd said yes, it doesn't mean that I would have been. But there was, in fact, I was a little unhappy about it because a couple of people, after it was mentioned to me, said, I hear you're going to the Senate. And I said, no, I'm not. And don't you go around saying that, because I haven't been offered it, and I'm not going to the Senate, and I don't want it out there that I might be.
Yeah.
So no, I didn't go to the Senate, and I don't want to go to the Senate. And I would say, who knows what's going to happen to the Senate anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Do you still go up to Parliament Hill and wander around the foyer there?
I do from time to time. I must admit that two things have happened. The longer you're away, the less compelling you find it. But also, I found after the majority government of 2011, it wasn't as exciting. There wasn't a vote every couple of months that
mm-hmm.
this could be it or that could be it. And the committees became quite calm and so forth. So it doesn't draw me the same way that it did, but what I'm really interested in and getting interested in for the next election is the issues that I think should be discussed in the election rather than probably what will be. So, pardon me. So I'm very interested, and you mentioned Canada 2020. We do public policy, and we're exploring issues and so forth. So those are the kind of things that I find really focus my attention now.
Did you miss being on the air, though?
You know, I don't.
Really?
I wondered if I would.
Yeah.
I'd planned for 2 years when I would leave, and the last year I said at Christmas to my wife, Shannon, I said, well, you know, this is the last 6 months. And she said, well, you better wait till Easter because, you know, I don't want you sitting around home moaning and groaning. You shouldn't have quit. So at Easter, I thought about it again, and I said, no, I think I'm going to stick to the plan, which was to leave in the summer of 2009. And I did. And, of course, I was off in the summer the last few years anyway. So for the first couple of months, nothing was different.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, will I miss it in the fall? But I didn't, and I haven't. So I made the right decision, which is good. But I'm glad I didn't do the book right away when I left, and I'm glad now that I have, because I think it, you know, obviously it's quite a bit about me, but it really is about how our country has changed, how the media has changed, how the media has driven politics in a way, but now politics is in a way is driving the media again, and I think for people who read it at that level as well as you know, well, Don happened to be doing this or doing that at the time, I think they'll get a sense of how politics and journalism interact and how they work and how a practitioner practiced it. So I hope it has that kind of a value, and I hope that younger people, say in journalism schools, read it and say, well, that's one way you can have a career that worked out pretty well. And so I hope, rather than just seeing it as about me, that it's also about the career and the colleagues and the different people I covered and how it all fit together.
And essentially the history of politics in this country.
Well, it is. I'll just give you one example of how the media has changed. And go back to the 1960s and Tommy Douglas. When Tommy Douglas announced that he was going to run in Regina, he just put out a press release. Well, you know, now today, you'd call a news conference, there'd be trucks and lights, and, you know, he just put out a press release. And the night he lost, and he was the leader of the party, there was no remote at his headquarters. He had to come down to the local TV station and make a statement.
Yeah.
Well, now you imagine, well, you know, what it's like on election night now.
Yeah, and you and Shannon remain busy with your consultancy?
We do. We keep very busy, although she's done more of that this past year. This book, I started really writing it in the summer of 2012, and so I've been, that's taken more time. I'll have more time after Christmas to go back and do the other work, too.
Yeah. It's been such a pleasure talking to you today. I really enjoyed this book. Good luck with it.
Well, thank you, and thanks for having me on. I really appreciate the opportunity.
You're very welcome. The book is called Welcome to the Broadcast, a memoir. It's from HarperCollins. Its author, Don Newman, joined me on the line from Ottawa. In Vancouver, I'm Joseph Planta.